Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the 49th edition of PWR Slam. Tonight, we bring you the devastating news that John O'Hare has not only passed away, but has taken his life.
Yes. I know we talked about this when Robin Williams tragically took his own life, but I cannot emphasize this enough, folks. If you're feeling down, if you're feeling like your back's against the wall and there's nothing you can do, seek out somebody. Please, please, do not allow yourself to get that despondent that you cannot handle it and that you cannot go on.
The most tragic thing is today is World Suicide Prevention Day.
I cannot stress it enough, people. If you feel that you cannot carry on, you don't have to call one of these hotlines. Talk to one of your friends. Talk to your doctor. If need be, talk to your pastor. See what he has to say. Don't feel that you have to end your life in order to fix your issues.
Katie, you're so correct. There's we can't emphasize it enough. There's nothing more, I believe, that can be said about it. It's a tragedy.
It's not only celebrities, you know. It's all the time. It's only celebrities that we hear about. It's everybody. Everybody. I don't care who you are. Everybody has a moment of depression where they feel that they just can't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care who you are.
Absolutely. I mean, I talked about my own situation after Robin Williams. I told a lot about it, and I'm not proud of the fact that it occurred, but thankfully I at least got past it. I was fortunate that I was able to get past it and go on. A lot of others are not. I'm talking to some of my longtime friends and former coworkers over the last couple of days about some projects and that. And as I'm talking to them about it, I'm sitting there thinking about the fact that one of our guys, he sadly felt the same way, and unfortunately he took matters into his own hands, I just, again, folks, there are numbers, there are people that you can talk to. Don't sit there and take this step. Please.
While we brought some bad news, it's time to announce some good news. Ladies and gentlemen, I can't hold it back any longer. Some of you don't. I'm going to put you guys on mute for just a couple seconds. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the announcement for our one-year anniversary show on October 1st. Ladies and gentlemen, here we go.
What a rush!
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, one half of the world's greatest tag team, and I'm not using that term lightly, like you may have heard Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas use in the past. No. In my personal opinion, one half of the world's greatest tag team, Road Warrior Animal, will be with us October 1st. And on that night, we will be paying a very special tribute to Road Warrior Hawk, who next month will have been gone 11 years.
Yes, yes, amazing. I mean, I've been friends with Joe and Mike for many, many years now, and this is really something that I've been looking forward to. I haven't spoken to Joe in quite a while, so it's definitely going to be great to have him on the air, and so we're looking forward to that, and we'll share some memories of Mike. Well, I've talked about the relationship that Mike and I have had over the course of the period of time that we all were working together and got to become really good friends in that. And
now, we did have somebody ask in the chat if Paul Elvrin would be joining us. And we are working on trying to get Paul to call in with a couple of his best memories of Hawk. And we'll see if that happens or not. We'll keep everybody updated. Hopefully we will get Mr. Elring to call in as well.
Right, right. You know, but, you know, folks, even if he doesn't, I mean, you know, the fact that we're going to have Joe on himself is already, you know, amazing in of itself, right there.
So, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, let's go to our first guest of the evening.
Ooh.
Yes. And Katie, you have exactly 3 minutes to not bore him.
I won't bore him. Trust me, I studied up. I promised. So I did.
Hello.
Hello. Good evening, Matt.
Hello.
All right, you're on live on PWR Slam. Good evening, and thank you for joining us.
How's it going?
Oh, we're doing great. It's really an honor to have you on.
Steve, that was the one you just heard talking. I'm Sean, and Tank Girl.
Tank Girl, but you can call me Katie.
Right on. Nice to meet you guys.
How's it going, buddy?
Pleasure to see you again, Rosie. Rosie, I worked with you on actually two shows. One a couple years ago, back in 2009, down at the Bureau County Fair in Princeton, Illinois, and the show got rained out, and they ended up sticking us in one of the buildings that they'd had all the cattle in, so that stunk to high heaven, but the show was really good.
That's pretty shitty there. I had to.
Yeah, talk about a bunch of bull.
And then I got to see you. My mom was with me, and we brought my younger nephew to the show, and he just loved you and DTM, and he was just that was up in Freeport, Illinois. I want to say in 2011, and it was a pleasure to work with you again.
Great. Well, it's always a pleasure working with you guys and everybody else that that shares something we all love, wrestling.
Damn.
Sweet. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And then I worked with your cousin Junior about a year and a half or so ago up in Belvedere on a show that we videoed for a real life episode for MTV. I'll tell you one thing, man. I've never seen anybody who goes through bugles like your cousin does. He just loves those things, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, next time you just don't put him in front of chickens. So he might enjoy that a little more.
Oh, God. Oh. Well, you know what, Beck? Let's start off by breaking into that exact idea. I mean, you know, a lot of families, they'll have family businesses, like a family will have a grocery store, or a family will have a restaurant. Some families might even, you know, have a funeral home. What was it like growing up in a family where the family business is professional wrestling?
Well, it was definitely exciting. It was probably not the best thing to do if you don't bring home a good report card. A lot of people probably got put on restriction, but I would get body slammed or headbutted if I brought home a bad report card. So,
On the floor or on the couch?
It kind of just depended. I'd have to map out my way through the house before I could see my dad. But luckily enough, most of the time my dad was always gone wrestling. So.
Okay, so what happened if you got an A or say a B?
Oh, well, I'd probably just get a pat on the back. But usually the A's and B's came in gym and lunchtime. So.
Now, Rosie, I've got to ask, what was it like growing up in that family? I mean, you were not only related to Roman Reigns, Roman is your brother, and Umaga, and Appa, and Suma, but, I mean, you're related to the whole family. With not only that side of the family, but The Rock as well.
Can we say
so
Dynasty?
Good work,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you know, everybody, pretty much everybody you named except Suma. I don't really know who that is, but yeah, you know, Rikishi, the Tonga Kid, Yokozuna, Samu, of course, we traveled together since we were kids, the others I shared a bedroom with at one point when they were training to wrestle and stuff, so it was pretty fun, it was fun experience because it gave me a chance to spend time with family and get to know my cousins a little bit better than most people get to know their family, and good times, man. Really good times.
Yoko was always my favorite growing up, and my mom and dad always asked me, what's so fascinating about him? I said, he's 600 pounds and he can move. I said, I've never seen a guy that big move like that, ever. You know, before that, we'd seen Bam Bam Bigelow do cartwheels, but some of the stuff Yoko did was so innovative. It was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, I really had a lot of respect for Yoko growing up, just the way he could move. He moved like a 120-pound man, you know, and he just kept going, just pegging away. He was awesome.
Yeah. Well, he was always a big man, and he knew how to... He knew how to gear his wrestling around his size, and that's pretty much a good strategy for anybody. That whether you're playing football, boxing, or anything, you're going to do the best to make it work for you versus your opponent. And Rodney did a great job. Yoko did a great job with inspiring. Folks like me, just for the things that I saw my cousin do in the ring, I knew I had the athletic ability to do the same type of stuff, and it just worked out. You know, he's he was definitely one of the best super heavyweights you'll ever find in the history of professional wrestling thus far. And but I'm sure, yeah, his name will always be remembered as somebody that that could get it done, even though it is a business that caters more to bodybuilders and athletically inclined people. But my family just seems to have the God-given ability to be big and handle a business too at the same time.
Right. Excellent. Right. Yeah. Now I'll let the young kids sit back here for a second, because I'm actually the old geezer of the group. Not only have I got all the years in the business, but of course, as I was growing up, when cable TV started to become part of the national scenery, I actually started out by seeing your uncle Dafa and Sika. And so, that's my first exposure to the family was through them. And I mean, some of the stuff that they did in the ring, the character was just, it was definitely insane. And I mean, it was obviously a time frame when you sit there and you look at it. I mean, you had the Wild Samoans. You have the Sheep Herders, you have the Rock and Roll Express, teams like that. What was it like, when you sit there, as a younger, younger man or a youngster even, watching your uncles, especially portraying these, vicious, almost animalistic type of characters when they were in the ring and on TV?
Well, like I said, when being raised, of course, my dad, Sika, and my uncle, Papa, it was pretty fun in the locker room. I kind of gauged the other wrestlers as how much they tipped me to go get them a pop after their match was over. So, yeah. I always liked people like S.D. Jones. He was a $5 tipper. And, people like Tor Kamado was a $5 tipper. Big John Studd, Andre Giant, everybody. So, although my dad and uncle were out there in the ring doing what they do, I was in the locker room doing what I do, and I was making tips going to get them pop. Somewhat of an entrepreneurial move on my part, I guess.
Hey, there you go. Whatever works, right?
if it made fair money, then that was great, because back then, working for Vince Sr., it was mostly fairgrounds in the Northeast Territory. So if it made me enough money to go play games at the fair while they were wrestling, and that's what I did.
All right. Yeah, let's talk about, because this is a subject that we really love to broach on here a lot. It's in fact the classic days of the territories and that. What was it like doing the kind of traveling around? I know, obviously, of course, during the school year, you weren't able to do that. But in the summertime, and that your uncle and your dad taking you out on the road with them like that.
Well, early in the years, I'd say probably from kindergarten to fifth grade, we traveled extensively. Of course, back then, the territories were pretty hot everywhere, and my dad and uncle were a pretty hot commodity. So, yeah, I didn't see the same elementary school 2 years in a row. But that wasn't until we started to settle down, and my dad picked Pensacola, Florida, for us to live, and that's you know, where we were from there, but that's also mm-hmm. when they were in a position to work with WWE and, well, WWF back then, and
right.
they were able to fly out of Pensacola a little more instead of us having to travel all over the place, so but it was fun. It was a good experience. Me and my sister Vanessa, we, you know, we got a lot of the country as kids. Although we weren't set in one place forever until I was in fifth grade. And but it was fun. It was a lot of fun. There was, you know, like I said, me, Samu, and my sister Vanessa, and his sister Monica. We were raised on the road. We were like military brats, except that military
uh-huh.
was wrestling. Well, I guess we were wow. considered wrestling brats.
Now, Rosie, I have to ask, was it hard to watch your uncle and your dad train some of the guys that they trained? Did their harsh training ever turn you off of wanting to be in the business?
Ooh.
It never turned me off because I never considered wrestling until after I got out of college. Well, after I got out of college, when the NFL didn't produce, when that was the only goal that I really set for myself that I didn't accomplish was getting in the NFL. And then it didn't take too long after college for me to call my dad and say, hey, I want to start wrestling. Just like my brother, Joe, same thing with him, you know, once the NFL kind of pushed him aside, then it didn't take him long to decide that, okay, and that wrestling was going to be, you know, a career decision versus a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
So it just, but as far as goal, my whole life, it was always to play football or, you know, in the NFL and same went with my brother. So but you know, hey, things happen. And obviously for my brother, it worked out to be the best decision probably that he made thus far in his life, so
mm-hmm.
career-wise and stuff like that. So yeah.
Now,
were
there a lot of guys that you saw that came through your dad and your uncle's training facility that didn't make it?
Oh, there's a few guys, of course, you know, and a few good guys that can't personally, you know, say that, you know, they would have been a great asset to WWE or WCW. But also with my uncle's school out of Allentown at the time, Pennsylvania, at Wild Samoan Training Center, it proved good for a lot of folks, you know, including Dave Bautista and, man, now that I think of his name, Billy Kidman, and there was a couple managers that came through that proved to be good with other companies, and you know, which basically summed up that my uncle and my dad's school was probably a good school to go to, along with, you know, the Monster Factory and several, couple others, schools
mm-hmm.
that if you wanted to be serious about professional wrestling, then these are the schools you need to get to.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, would you say that they were harder on you as a trainee as opposed to other guys that you were training with at the time because of the fact that your family?
They weren't too hard. My dad trained me for a little bit. It wasn't that I actually went to a school whenever I decided to wrestle. I was living in New Orleans, Louisiana, and I just called him, and he actually moved from Pensacola to New Orleans with me, and we set the ring up in the backyard and went to work.
Uh-huh.
So he actually kind of put everything on hold to get me in the ring, but I also, through the years of, you know, being there when Tonga Kid and Fatu and Rikishi and Yokozuna, they were training to wrestle. I would, so to speak, I was the jobber, I guess. I was the one that tried all the moves on and stuff, so I once my dad came to train me, I pretty much, you know.
This sounds more like a pin cushion.
Yeah.
Launching bag.
Crash test dummy.
You guys probably had swing sets in your backyard. I had a wrestling ring, so.
Hey. I had a sister who used to throw me across the room. I hear you.
Well, yeah, I used to get in trouble for putting my sister in figure four leg locks and stuff like that.
I have the older brother that thought it would be cool to take the younger brother and we're going to wrestle, and yeah. And then there was the one time that he speared the mattress and got stuck in between the mattress and box spring and had to call my mom when she was at work. Mom, I need you to come home. Why? I got stuck between the mattress and box spring. I need you to come home.
Oh. Oh, Lord.
Oh, man.
Oh,
thank
Lord.
God you didn't have a waterbed, huh?
I know mine and Samu's mom, being that they were wrestlers' wives, they didn't have to call my dad and uncle too much while they were on the road. They were well capable enough of smacking the piss out of us if we acted up too much. So
I gotta say, I've heard a lot about the women in the family being as tough, if not even tougher than the guys.
I've definitely watched some of my cousins' women at the time. I've seen them beat up a few men here and there in the arenas when they were booing their brother, Tonga Kid, or my dad and uncle. And I've seen them handle a couple guys a few times. So yeah, I would probably be more scared of my girl cousin than I would any normal human being.
Well, I totally understand. I totally understand that. I was afraid of my mom more so than my dad.
Right. Well, my dad and mom seemed to have the best psychology with the kids. As soon as I thought my dad would smack me, my mom would. And then when I thought my mom would smack me, my dad would. So, they had it down pretty good.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Oh, God. All right. Now, when you initially got started out, of course, you and your cousin were put together as a team. So, I mean, obviously, you were fortunate in the fact that not only were you working with somebody that was family and familiar to you, but also, of course, somebody that trained exactly where you were. And that. So, what was it like, especially like in that first year or two with the two of you running the roads together and that?
Well, it depends, because I worked with two of my cousins. Samu was the first tag team partner that I had, and that actually started in late part of 95. I was in Puerto Rico wrestling, and And my uncle called me and said, hey, son, well, this is around Christmas time. And he's like, hey, son, you want to work for WWF? And I was like, oh, sure.
Yeah.
Puerto Rico all year. But so I went up with my cousin Samuel, and we tried out in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And everything worked out as planned. You know, we got contracts, but unfortunately, it was kind of short-lived due to some the issues between my cousin and WWE that dated back before before we started tagging. And then we, of course, went to ECW, but my cousin was also doing a lot of independent work as the head shrinker, so...
Okay.
What it kind of the age difference was a little bit off, I guess. The goals were a little bit different. Obviously, he had been in the business. Well, he was wrestling for WWF since he was 17, so it was a little bit different. And then once I moved back to Pensacola, that's when my younger cousin, Umaga, was getting into the business, and it just seemed to be a good fit. And luckily enough, we ran into a friend of mine from ECW, Sabu, in Dothan, Alabama. And he presented us with an opportunity to go to Japan to work for FMW, Frontier Martial Arts Wrestling. And,
I love me some FMW. That is some good wrestling to watch.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we had a lot of good matches with Hayabusa and Tanaka, I believe. I forget their names, man. They all sound the same.
So would that be shoot wrestling?
Huh?
Would that be what is known as shoot wrestling?
That was professional wrestling, but there was a little shooting involved, yeah. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah,
what
they call strong style, right?
Well, that's just a general term that all Japanese wrestlers and all Japanese people like to use is strong style. They like to think they're invincible, and definitely it's a different aspect of wrestling, but it's also a good one. A lot of fun. It was just a lot of fun. So.
I mean, the Japanese strive on wanting to see violence, and I was watching a match with Hayabusa in it, and it's an exploding steel cage, and the whole ring explodes, and I'm like, holy crap! I'm like, man, I'm glad we don't have to go that far in the United States to entertain the fans.
Mm.
Well, obviously, we did go that far, and that came through the national eyes of ECW, and actually,
right.
ECW was based on a lot of Japanese style matches. So, it was fun. We were young, like all young people, you feel like you're invincible until you get 44 years old and you walk them like you're 60 years old. But back in the day,
yeah.
when your body healed up a little quicker, it was always fun. So.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because I know, of course, back at that time, back in the days of tape trading and that... I know that FMW, especially to get copies of it here in the States, was like a hot item. Anybody that wanted anything from overseas, it was like, yeah, well, I'll trade some ECW for some FMW in that, and get their hands on some of the stuff that was happening over there at the time. Now. Obviously, of course, the business changed between when your dad and uncle were starting out and becoming big names and that into your period of time. going from the territory system to where Vince started to take the company national and, you know, buy out other companies or, in some cases, just put them out of business and that. What was your take on the way the business changed from between what you grew up with and what was actually starting to happen as you got involved?
It just depended, you know. When you're around the business your whole life and you're around it 24/7 the way I grew up around it, I didn't really understand the difference between 80s wrestling, the Attitude Era, so to speak, in the 90s, and then the way it developed into the 2000s, but it was a little bit different. I remember talking to Randy Orton one time when we both were sitting in the locker room, and we always wondered, you know, how people that were in the business, like Tommy Dreamer and you know, Bubba Dudley, and all those guys, you know, that they grow up in the business and they're just wrestling historians. They can tell you, you know, they would be able to tell me more about my dad and uncle's matches than I would be able to tell them. And I kind of wondered, you know, well, do these guys hate us? Do they think, do you think we're spoiled or something? Well, it's not that we were spoiled. It's just we were raised in the business, and it was a little bit of a different outlook and outtake for us. But for as far as going from the 80s to now, it evolved, and that it, now that you're older, of course, you learn a little bit more about stuff, or you think back about stuff, and it was just pretty exciting to see, and I was kind of happy with the way it was, because I definitely, you know, I went through my hardcore era with mm-hmm. with wanting to do nothing but hardcore matches, and then when I got into a position to where, you know, old school sounded a lot better, because it kept you a little more healthier and a little bit more mobile, and you just kind of, I guess through the years, you just kind of take a piece of all of it and develop it into your style. But you know, I always dug, you know, Vince would always say, you know, that, you know, less is more sometimes, and you know, kind of wanted everybody to get out of the hardcore, so to speak, where he just didn't want anybody jumping off the rafter of a building to mm-hmm. make something happen, you know, with the yeah. crowd. So it was just fun. It was fun watching it develop the way it has.
Okay. Now, of course, you know, when you went back, one of the things that happened, of course, is the fact that when you and because it came back in right around that time, Eric Bischoff, who of course had been Vince's biggest competitor, suddenly wound up working for him, and that, and then you guys were put into this concept of being Eric's enforcers / bodyguards. So who actually, you know, how was the idea broached to you guys about doing this, and what was your original reaction to the whole concept of what became known as 3-Minute Warning?
We didn't actually know. At that time we were based in Cincinnati, Ohio, where I live now, and And we were just, anytime WWE would be anywhere in the vicinity, me, Charlie Haas, my, rest in peace, my good friend Steve Bradley, we would always tell Les Thatcher, hey, we're going, you know, we're not coming to practice today, we're going into Monday Night Raw. And and we went, and it happened as quick as us sitting there thinking that, you know, we got out of the ring with Arn Anderson and you know, our little training session during the afternoon. And next thing you know, representative came up to us and said, hey, you guys are starting tonight. Go get some clothes from the mall. And that's when they gave us the concept of, we don't want you to be Samoans, we want you to be gangsters. And me and my cousin were like, shit, all right, we're cool with that. So they gave us a couple $1,000. We went to the mall, bought some hip-hop clothes, and it kind of took off from there. We didn't even know our names until Eric mentioned them a couple weeks later. So that's just what happened. So we didn't really have time to react. It was just, hey, you guys are starting. Okay. So that's the way, that's how that just basically came about. And there wasn't really, I don't think, we didn't have really any input or thought to it. They just kind of told us what they wanted us to be, and we agreed, and that's basically how 3 minute warning got us for.
Excellent.
Yeah, I mean, that was, yeah, go ahead, Katie.
Okay, speaking of 3 minute warning, hey, first of all, what was it like working with the Fabulous Moolah and Mae Young? Yes, I'm going to get into the attack on them, of course.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was great. The only time we worked with them was when we kicked the shit out of them.
That's what I'm saying.
It was great, of course. You know, I mean, I obviously had been around Moolah more than my cousin, Becky, or Umaga, or Jamal, whichever one you want to use. And it was, of course, it's always an honor and a pleasure, and you want to do the best you can not to put him in the hospital, but at the same time, you get carried away a little bit, and both of them had to go see the trainer after we got done with them, and of course, we went by the training room to give them a nice hug and thank you, and I pay the respects like that. But of course, anybody that we worked doing a quote unquote 3 minute warning on, it was a pleasure, and it was an honor for them to do that for us, just as well, or just as much as, you know, later on in careers you would do that for the younger guys. So
it's pretty awesome. I've heard the ladies, they're pretty much up for anything. Yeah, Vince had them brutalized more than once, so yeah. I heard they were
they were in it to win it, you have nothing to do but respect that.
Okay, so then, so that happened for a while. Then your cousin got released, and then suddenly they put you in this storyline with Shane Helms, who, of course, at that time had the concept that he was this comic book superhero known as the Hurricane, and
right.
So you then became, instead of Rosie, this big badass guy that you were at that point, suddenly, the comedy came out, and the character known as the superhero in training, which, of course, we all know where that came from.
Yep.
And that. So, yeah. So how, talk to us about that first time when you sat down with Shane and whoever else was involved in the beginnings of that, and started putting the ideas together for the whole storyline there.
Well, actually, the first person I sat down with was Vince. We were basically bickering at lunchtime, and I kind of, you know, sat down with him and wanted to pick his brain a little bit on any ideas, or like he could come up with any ideas to further myself as a singles, and him and Michael Hayes were like, well, we're not going to put you as a singles. We thought we would put you with Hurricane. And, of course, I knew who Shane was, and I was like, all right, I don't really understand. And Vince came across and was like, well, the first part of the storyline, you're probably not going to like your outfit, but, you know, we're going to call you the superhero in training. And as soon as he said that, I just kind of got quiet and I was like, all right, I don't know, because my whole career I've always played a kick-ass Samoan or what have you, and I wasn't really sure of the concept or what have you. But then when Vince said that you see all these kids in the audience wearing an SHI t-shirt.
Of course.
And once he said it like that, of course, I started seeing dollar signs, and that kind of made it a little bit easier. But what a lot of people don't know is that I did a little bit of acting before I became a wrestler, and that was always my goal. Coming into wrestling, I always told myself, I'm either going to be an actor or I'm going to be a wrestler. And so once I kind of swallowed the concept, I figured, all right, well, this is going to be an acting part on your life, and you know you're gonna do what they say. I always had a good friend, Doink the Clown, Ray Apollo, which I believe was the third Doink. You know, he always told me, hey, you know, they throw something at you, you just take it and you run with it, and show them, you know, that you can put that character over. And so that's kind of the mindset that I took with it, was, all right, well, if they're gonna put me in a rodeo clown, then I'm going to do the best thing I can to put it over, and it turned out to be okay. You know, I would have much rather been a tag team champion as a 3-minute warning character, but at the same time, getting to work with Shane, in the Hurricane outfit and seeing the faces on a bunch of those kids out there really made me, it was fulfilling enough for me to see those kids smile and you know, have fun with that character. And that's the way I treated it. I was just going to have the most fun I could with it and be thankful that I've, you know, got a job.
Cool. Steve, you still there?
Okay, yeah, sorry about that. I muted myself here. Let's talk about your health, because of course your health wound up being a big factor in that, and then what you're currently doing outside of the ring in that. How are you doing in that? And then, Bill, kind of tell us about your little venture there where you now live in Ohio.
No, well, of course, we moved to Ohio because WWE had put us here with HWA, like a developmental type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted us to have a place to report until they were ready for us to be on TV. And so I've basically been in Cincinnati since 2001. So once we started wrestling, everything was fine. I've met, you know, instead of moving home, I've met my ex-wife now. But but you know, I've got my kids, Madison and Cola, and Jordan here, and everything was fine until a couple years after I got out of WWE, I developed a atrial fibrillation, which is basically where your heart beats, you're irregular.
Mm-hmm.
And once it started eating like that on a regular basis is when I had to basically retire from wrestling. That you can't obviously wrestle too well with a little regular heartbeat. I did do it for a little while. The first time my heart beat at irregular was in Scottsdale, Arizona, and we were in a 6-man match with the Dudleys, and I had to stay in Scottsdale overnight for medical evaluation, but my heart ended up resetting itself, which they knew would happen. But then later on in the years, it started beating irregular, and it's still beating irregular now, and it kind of messed me up a little bit, and set on a little bit of depression, and of course, you're going to get depressed when you can't do something that you've come to love more than before. I've always loved wrestling, but once I was actually making a living at wrestling, I, you know, of course, loved it even more. So, but yeah, it just started being irregular, and then I had to go to the hospital, as a lot of people that follow me on Facebook knows. I said early in January and February, I had to go into the hospital for about a week and a half, I was retaining water and kind of all the symptoms that congestive heart failure would carry, and so they kind of fixed me, and ever since then we've been messing around with different medications to kind of get my heart beating regular again. So finally came about some meds that has gotten my heart beating more regular. It's beating more efficiently now, and now it's just pretty much a weight gain where I gotta, you know, drop some of this weight that I've gained over being inactive in wrestling. So, I got a little work to do. I'm actually just packed my stuff up in Cincinnati and moving down to Pensacola so I can get on the ball. Me and my dad will, you know, get with each other, and I'm just going to hang out with my dad and my family and, you know, get in the YMCA and swim and go out to the beach and go walking. And probably this time next year, I'm going to look better than Roman Reigns. So.
Never mind.
I always look better than my little brother. He's just got a better looking body, so we're going to.
And he's got a little more rink on him too.
quite a bit.
Yeah, well, you know, seems like Goldust and Cody managed to make it happen. Maybe one day you might see Rosie and Roman tagging up.
That'd be pretty.
That would be my gosh. How does it feel when you sit there and you watch and you watch your brother on the air now and that and see how successful he has.
Oh, it's great. I'm the proudest older brother on the planet right now. You know, I've always been proud of Joe. He's, although our age difference is pretty big, I don't know if you guys, like I said, if you follow me on Facebook or Instagram, I just posted a picture of my graduation picture, and Joe is, 3 years old at the time, so,
wow.
We got... age difference. So, but growing up, and although I wasn't at home a lot when I was home, just watching them through the years. I mean, there was a couple years that I moved back to Pensacola, and me and my cousin Ekmo, Jamal or Umaga, we actually coached the Usos and Joe's football team for a couple years. So, it's just, I remember things that Joe did, back when he hit the game-winning home run against his best friend Logan at Myrtle Grove Ballpark. And, I remember him running touchdowns as a Pee Wee leaguer, and then as he was getting older, anytime I had off, I'd go down to Georgia Tech and watch him, sack quarterbacks and stuff. So he's definitely, he's just never given any room for anything but to be proud of. He's an awesome little brother and probably the best little brother anybody could ask for.
Wow. That's excellent. So now, you're talking about heading back down to Florida, because now I know that you have a restaurant there in Cincinnati. So are you going to hand that off to another family member, or are you going to close it up? What's going to be the situation with that, if you don't mind asking?
No, I actually closed it once my health issues got in the way a little bit. I along with the health issues and the unusually long winter we had up here in Cincinnati, it just became imminent that I needed to shut it down. And but my goal is to get a food truck service going. So. I've got a few investors down in Florida that are interested in working with me, and a couple of those names are Derek Brooks, surely just now a Hall of Famer for the NFL, and Lloyd Jones Jr., which a lot of people know is probably one of the best pound-for-pound boxers in the world. We're looking to do a food truck service series and geared around Island Boy Barbecue, because the times that they've been over at my house barbecuing, they always love the chicken. So
I'll take a mess of chicken and ribs.
Of course they want to put some ribs in there, so we're gonna hash it out when I get down there. And actually, I got to meet them on Sunday, and we'll kind of get it figured out. And then once we get everything marked down, hashed out, and then we'll obviously get it advertised, posted, and tweeted, and all that fun stuff.
Wow. Well, that definitely sounds really, really good, and we're, obviously, of course, glad that you're health is such that you're able to even think about doing that. And that's the most important thing. I mean, you know, careers, working, things like that, you know, can hold. The biggest thing is, of course, taking care of yourself and making sure that you're going to be around to enjoy these things and enjoy your family for, you know, as long as possible.
Right. Well, that's the whole plan is, you know, I told my daughter, yeah, like, I got a plan on walking her down the aisle. So,
yeah.
No, can't miss that.
No.
Absolutely.
No, I can't. There's no time for death when you got to make plans for that. So. I do want to say real quick, all my love to my boy Sean O'Hare. He was definitely one of my better friends through my wrestling career, and I just want to tell my Uso that I love him, I hope heaven is a good spot for him.
Definitely, yeah, because now obviously, you know, for all of us in the industry, it's a, you know, it's always a bad thing when we lose another brother, and so can relate to what you're saying on that one, man. Absolutely. So.
Right.
Well, I know you got to get going, unfortunately. But before you do go, we do want to go ahead, and if you wouldn't mind cutting a little bumper for us, so you know, would sit there and say hi, this is, and tell them who you are and that. And you're listening to P, the letter P is in Peter, W, R, Slam on the Back to Basics Network. So whenever you're ready to do that, you go ahead and start running in, and we'll take it from there.
All right. What was that again? WPR
Slam? PWR
Slam. PWR Slam.net?
No. PWR Slam on the Back to Basics Network.
All right. Well, this is Rosie. Always known, always will be known as the SHIT, the shit. And we're coming to you live and in color from PWR Slam, Back to Basics Network. Am I right with that? That should be right. If it's not right, then you're going to have to deal with it. And if you got a problem with it, you can always hit me up on Facebook and I'll correct it.
That's excellent. Matt, appreciate it. Thank you very much. You take care of yourself, all right?
Absolutely, guys. Man, thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. You take care, man.
You too.
All right. Goodbye now.
All right. Bye.
All right. Well, there we have it. Matt Anoi, a.k.a. Rosie. We're definitely glad that he was able to take time out and talk to us this evening. And so in just a matter of a couple of minutes, we will have a couple of Katie's countrymen, Jules Malone and Jesse Amato. So we'll take ourselves a quick little break, and we'll be back with Jules Malone and Jesse Amato. You are listening to PWR Slam on the Back to Basics Network. We'll be right back.
Kenny the Starmaker Bowman here, having a ball at PWR Slam here on the Graveyard Network. Just having a... Kenny the Starmaker Bowman here, having a ball at PWR Slam here on the Graveyard Network. Just having a blast and can't wait to be back on here. Everybody tune in and listen. This is a fantastic show.
I love Kenny Bowlin.
All right, we are back.
Yeah, Kenny's a great guy. Kenny's a real blast to have on.
Well, okay, what was that? Was that take 4, 5, or 6? He messed up like how many times?
I think that was the fourth or the fifth take on that one.
If whoever was here for that one, you know what we're talking about. If you don't, he just couldn't. Oh my God, he said everything but PWR. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
Yep. It was choice. I mean, that was his first time.
It sounded like his Beats by Bowlin headphones were dysfunctional that night.
Ooh, never mind.
Yeah. Speaking of, Katie, how are yours?
I still have to order mine. I'm paying off a bike at the moment, so yeah, $2,000 is a little more important than 30. Yeah, I'm getting there. Don't worry, man. Don't worry.
Yeah, right. Well, gotta make sure we take care of our friend Kenny. And for those of you who don't know, get on his Facebook page. He has the Beats by Bowlin headphones that you can get customized to any team that you want. He has T-shirts available. In fact, he just came out with a new one. We saw some pictures of on his page the other day that say "I'm a Bowlin guy" on them. But make sure you support him and tell him that we sent you over at PWR Slam. And now for our next plug. Of course, tonight is week two of the Pin Me Pay Me contest for a copy of Bobby Smedley's book, Pin Me, Pay Me. So if you have not yet done so, make sure you get over to our Facebook page at Pro Wrestling Roundtable and answer the question. Now you have to look at the rules, because there is a specific way you have to answer the question in order for it to qualify. And if you answer it correctly, you will be in the fight to get a personalized autographed copy of Bobby's book, Pin Me, Pay Me, which we will be announcing that winner in just a matter of, 3 weeks. 3 weeks on October 1st, when we will have Joe Laurinaitis, a.k.a. Road Warrior Animal. All right, I got all the plugs in, and I need some oxygen. So, John, take it away.
Okay, and well, if you chat the PWR Slam Facebook page, well, the roundtable page, whatever you want to call it, it's in the chat. There you go.
Ladies and gentlemen, next week, PWR Slam episode 50.
50.
50. 50. Echo, echo, echo.
Yeah,
it's going to be awesome.
It's going to be great. Vordell Walker will be with us, and we'll have a couple other guests. It'll be 3 hours live, and if we go into after party, you must be called in. The same way if we go into after party tonight, if you're not called in, you will not be able to hear us until we go archived. So please make sure, if you want to hear all of this show in its entirety, the last hour you will have to call in for, because at 11 o'clock Central Standard Time, 12 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, we are no longer live.
That's right. And that number is 646-478-0073. And you can also use that to call in with questions for our guests.
Or you can use the blue Skype button. That little S that you see on the page, if you scroll up from the chat, you will see it. That does not mean superhero in training. That doesn't mean Superman. It means...
Well, Wardell is going to be here next week. One of our members in chat, Wardog Alpha, he wrote music for him when he was in TCW. So he's a cool guy, complete beast.
Wow.
And
ladies and
gentlemen, we've had a lot of great episodes. Don't be afraid to hit us up. We are working on the archives page. There will be an update within one coming. If you would like archives, please contact me. I do have the file. It is sendable. I can send it to you as an MP3. You can hit me up on my Facebook at Sean David Hubbard. Don't be afraid to hit me up with any questions you might have for me about the show or anything else. If you need the archives, we've had a lot of great episodes. Like I said, next week is going to be number 50, and October 1st will be our one-year anniversary, and it's big. So,
right.
If you missed the roast of Kenny Bolin, that in itself you need to hit me up for, because that was a fantastic show. We had Jerry Jarrett. We had Jim Cornette.
That was
Bobby
Sims called in. I mean, it was just Tugboat.
Yeah.
A previous guest on our show,
yeah.
Tugboat.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a two to roast Kenny Bolin. And there will be another roast coming in the near future. And we do have a comedy night. Steve, do you want to tell the fans a little bit about that?
Oh, my.
Right. Well, we'll have, of course, somebody who, at least to Chicago fans, is quite familiar, Jay Washington, who is known when he's in the ring under the name of Trauma. But Jay has become quite a well-known stand-up in his own right. He regularly hosts at the Laugh Factory in Chicago and has toured around the country doing stand-up. He's also done a lot of commercial work in that. And speaking of, we will also have at that time person who might be familiar. And Sean, I will let you go ahead and make sure that you put that one out there as well, because he's definitely quite the name. We've, unfortunately, of course, been talking about Sean O'Hare tonight, and this is, in fact, somebody who actually worked with Sean back in the day as part of the group The Natural Born Thrillers. None other than Mike Sanders, and he will be part of our comedy night as well.
And then we have one more. And do you want to tell everybody who that's going to be?
You know what? Bring me back up to speed. I've got a lot of.
I can't remember his real name.
What's that now?
Tweek Phoenix. He's a comedian.
Oh, yes. Right. Okay. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yes, for those people who might be aware of a team that has run on the independent circuit, known as the Phoenix Twins, this will be one half of that pairing. So, again, that's coming up shortly as well. So, you can't afford to miss an episode. If you do, we also have past episodes available on iTunes, so that you can download them for your iPhone, your iPad. Does anybody actually even have an iPod anymore?
yes, I do. It's in my drawer. I haven't used it in a while.
Oh,
but yeah, I do.
Oh, okay.
It's become like
okay.
That dildo that you have.
Hey! Oh. Shh, don't talk about my toy box, Jesus. Come on, man. Jesus.
We're not supposed to be talking about those things on the air, Sean.
No.
Those are safe for the private phone. Those are safe for the private phone conversations when we're doing stuff after the show.
What are you talking? What? Okay, I'm a new co-host here. I didn't sign up for that.
All right. Well, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go to them individually, one at a time. We are going to go to Jesse Amato and Jules Malone.
Good evening out there.
Jesse,
Jules, are you guys there?
Now.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Two ringy dingies.
Hello.
Hello, Jesse.
Hello.
Yes.
You are on with BWR Slam. It's Sean.
Hi, guys.
How are you?
All right, what's going on, boys?
All right, you are with Kate, Tank Girl.
You can call me Katie.
And Steve Kane, and I'm going to go ahead and dial Jules in, and we'll get this thing going.
Cool.
Excellent. All right. So we'll have a little bit of a dead space while we're ringing Jules' line here, so hang on just a minute. There we go.
Hello?
Hello, Jules. You are on with PWR Slim and Jesse Amato.
Amazing. He's, like, right in front of me.
I know. It's like a pickle. I'm going to have to go over here because it's going to trip you the fuck out.
Oh, gosh. Oh, well, hey. All right. Well, this will be a load of fun. Katie. They are your countrymen, so why don't we let you go ahead and kind of get this whole thing started here.
Is that better?
Our girl Katie, she's also a fellow Canadian, so we'll go ahead and let her start things off with you guys.
Right on. Let's do it.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, Katie. Floor is all yours. Katie? Oh, gosh. Did we embarrass Katie now?
Katie?
Oh, my gosh. All right. Okay, well, then, I guess we scared her off with some of the talk that we'd had a little bit.
No, you didn't
right
scare
before.
Me. You got me embarrassed and everything, and I muted myself.
There you are.
I know, all night long. Okay, I'll have to let you in on a little something. This is my first week officially co-hosting with them, and all night I got because there's a chat that you can see. They type in questions and whatnot, and when I laugh, I snort when I laugh, so they've been trying to get me to do that all night, all three of them. They've been embarrassing me. You name it, they've done it, right? Down
it's,
to sex toys.
It's okay. Trust me, I've been through that before. I know where you're coming from, sweetheart.
Yeah, they do it to me all the time. But, yeah, okay, who should we start? I'll start with Jules, ladies, first. So who did you train with growing up, and what got you interested in the sports entertainment industry?
I started training at Squared Circle Wrestling.
Excellent.
In Toronto, Ontario, and my trainer was Rob Fuego.
Ooh, excellent.
Yeah, he's the trainer. He's also trained like TNA stars like Gail Kim, Angelina Love. Oh my gosh, and many other girls.
List. That's too. Quite the list. Yeah.
Now, Jules, being you're from Canada, I have to ask: did you ever get to work with Nicole Matthews?
Sorry? Nicole Matthews? No, I have not.
Okay.
All right.
See, we worked all this out
last night. No, but I would definitely love to have a chance to work with her. So someone has to make that happen, I think. So.
Oh, the list of people she has worked with is quite lengthy. We got here, we have Mickey Knuckles, we have Jim Neidhart, we have Jim Duggan, wow, Double J, Jeff Jarrett, Davey Boy Smith Jr., wow, that's quite the list.
Mm-hmm.
It's a list and a half. Oh, I've also got Jake the Snake Roberts. What was he like to work with?
Oh, Jake? He was, I went on tour with him for LCW in Newfoundland, and I had a really great time with him. He was honestly, he was like growing up, I always like watched him, and then being able to hang out with him, it was very interesting because he just taught a lot about, how the business was. And, you know, he was very down to earth. He was very giving and caring. And, you know, he was a really great guy. I had a lot of fun with him. he taught us a lot of jokes.
I bet.
Oh, yeah.
Off the collar jokes, too. I just imagine he's got quite the mouth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, funny enough, at the end of the tour, I ended up having to drive him. For Newfoundland.
Oh, damn. No,
and he is he's the best passenger, like, he's the best person to, like, drive with, because he's just like, oh, look out, honey, look out, look out, look out, look out, look out.
You know? Oh, yeah, driving on the East Coast.
For everybody.
Yeah, driving on the East Coast is an experience.
Yes. Mm. And, he's a very awesome guy.
Yeah, I would have loved to have partied with him in Newfoundland. That would have been amazing. Or anywhere in Brunswick. Cool.
Quite the experience, I have to say.
Well, we do like road stories, so anytime you feel like dropping one, you can.
Yeah, sure, no problem. Let me think. Actually, I don't really have any really good road stories, but let me think about that. Give me some time.
Now, Jesse, where did you get your start?
I got my start up at Figure Four with under Chris Cutthroat Garvin in Bradford, Ontario. It's a little known school way up in the north of Ontario there, and that's where I got my teeth.
Awesome.
Now, what made you want to do the deathmatch style? Because looking at your deathmatch record isn't, and this is no insult to you, but it would make the common fan wonder, why does this guy want to keep doing this? I mean, he's not winning these matches. He's putting his body on the line, but he's not winning. Why would he keep doing it?
For the love.
It's a standout, to be honest with you. When it comes to males in professional wrestling, we're almost a dime a dozen, to be honest with you. There's a lot of really fantastic talent out there, and I utilize a lot of my gifts to be able to endure the punishment and creatively give it out as well. That's pretty much my drive to keep doing the death matches, is to just keep being different and standing out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's different too, right? And it's unique. Not a lot of people could say, hey, I wrestled in a rope barbed wire death match. But myself and Jules Malone could say that we can.
Absolutely.
That's a pretty sick fact, you know, like, I'm pretty sick too when I fight, but I'll tell you straight up, I don't know if I can handle that, you know, I'm not a girly girl, bumps, bruises, scratches, cuts, whatever, but it's going further than I would.
Now, you guys did some work with IWA Mid-South, or I know, Jules, you did. What was it like working down there? Because I know Ian's got those girls down there, I mean, they're willing to do anything. They would walk on hot coals for him if he asked them to.
Well, my experience with IWA is that was fun. Let's just say that. I got to enter into the Queen of the Death Matches. And I faced Thunder Kitty.
Ooh.
Yeah, and we had a barbed wire.
I worked with Thunder Kitty. Thunder Kitty was different, and I you know, she reminded me of that great Moolah, and I really wasn't into her, but Ian had a two-night show, and I worked the first night, and then I saw her again the second night, and I was like, you know what? She's just got that something different that you need in a female roster, because you can't have, you know, tits and ass everywhere, because that ain't going to, you know, that'll only get you so far.
I agree.
Yeah, she's got tits and ass. She looks good. Don't get me wrong, but yeah, she has a very different flair to herself. And so, yeah, her and I, we faced off in the dog collar barbed wire match.
Oh,
it was not very
wow. Funny.
Mm-hmm. Never mind.
I mean, I've refereed hardcore over the years, but my gosh, you're a better person than I am to actually be willing to do that kind of stuff. Seriously.
I did barbed wire once. I was at a show in Colfax, Iowa. I did my announcing gig. I did my spot. And I got to the back, and they went, oh, by the way, you're in the six-man tag. And I said, isn't that the six-man tag that's going to be hardcore and have the barbed wire and everything else? Yeah, you'll be fine, kid. We're going to gig you and everything else. Great. I've never gigged, but if you say this is going to be okay, fine. Just increase my payday.
Yeah.
Damn right, man. Bring extra bandages.
Exactly. Exactly.
I did it once, and I was like, man, no barbed wire ever again. Oh. Like, ouch.
You know, I would never say, if someone offered me another one of those matches, I would say, hell yeah. I would definitely do another one of those. Because now I have experience, and I know what to do.
All right. Mm. So maybe we should look
ready
forward.
To bring it.
Should we look
yeah.
forward to a match with you and Mickey Knuckles? Barbed wire
sure.
match. Because I know that's
sure,
her thing,
why
too.
Not? Yeah, of course. I've faced her twice already in WSU.
I hear she's pretty ruthless.
Yeah, mm. her and I, yeah, we bash heads twice.
We've had her on here. She's an awesome girl.
Yeah,
she's really cool.
she is.
Off. You know, at the end of the day, she is just a very strong girl. She's very smart, and she can really kick some ass, because trust me, she kicked my ass too.
Well, I wouldn't
right.
want to meet either, be in a dark alley,
yeah,
but that's the point.
yeah, she
had me do a spot with her on the last show I worked with her in Freeport. She was like, I want you to get on the mic and say how disappointed you are in me, because I had to cheat to win, and I let you down, and I let the fans down, and then I'm just going to spear you and beat the ever-loving shit out of you. And my mom was there, and my nephew was there, and my nephew cried because he loved Mickey up until that point, because he got to hang out with Mickey before the show, because Mickey took a real liking to him. So the moment that happened, he was screaming bloody murder, and I was like, oh, this is not going to be a fun car ride home.
Yeah. Now, one of the things,
let me
course,
tell you,
she
hits just as hard as every man. They tell me you'll be fine. She hits like a girl.
She is
oh,
a very
no.
hard-hitting
girl.
They don't
call her the walking episode of Cops for nothing, sweetheart. Let me tell you, when she comes in with a punch.
Oh, shit.
Look out.
Oh, I know. Trust me. I know. That girl is strong, and she is so tough.
Talk about working snug. working tight. Yeah, there you go. There you go. But, of course, one of the things that we've also talked about is the fact that she's definitely a really great leader in the locker room and that. What would you say is your experience having been in that locker room with her? How is that like?
With Macy Nichols?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. In the locker room of Macy Nichols, I would have to say she's like a fairy godmother. She runs things. She tells everybody, like, you know, it's okay. She puts everybody in their place. She tells everybody, you know, this is how it's got to be. If it's not okay, then too bad.
Oh,
you know?
Damn.
And, but she does it the right way. She says it the right way. She has a good heart and she has a strong mind.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Now, Jesse,
that's
you were
great.
A part of the first one was good, but the second one was a disaster, the hardcore road trip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had Steve D'Angelo and a whole bunch of people that got stuck up in Canada on right after that happened this year.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
Why don't you tell us your experience with that?
Well, Hardcore Road Trip was very bittersweet. It was good in the sense that it's kind of what put me on the map in my match with Sada there. But with the screw job and us basically beating the shit of each other for nothing, it really left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths. I can't speak with any higher regards for Steven DeAngelis for everything that he did for Hardcore Road Trip. I mean, there's nothing of the bad falls onto his shoulders. But in hindsight, Hardcore Road Trip, as much as it sucks that none of us got paid, I like to think that I kind of won in the end because it's what kind of put me out there and put me on the map as somebody to look out for when it comes to the hardcore deathmatch style wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Yeah. And so what's it been like since that incident happened? What have you been able to go and do since, you know, since this all kind of brought you out to the forefront?
Well, that opened up the doors to IWA. I went down to the King of Death matches with Jules did the Queen of Death match and wrestled Matt Tremont in the first round of the World Series of Glass. And opened a lot of people's eyes that deathmatch wrestling isn't just about smashing a bunch of shit over people's heads. It's not about just blood and guts. It's about actually trying to use the weapon to tell a story. And that's really the key to every deathmatch, and that really should be the key. But it's often overlooked. You get a lot of negative shit going on about deathmatch workers and that we don't know how to work, we don't know what we're doing, it kills the business. But
I tell you what,
I
saw Masada work a kid. I worked one of Ian's shows, or two of Ian's shows, and one of the nights, Davey Richards was supposed to make it with somebody else, and they didn't make it because the weather was bad. And I saw Masada work this kid by the name of Bucky Collins, and I'm like, Masada's a deathmatch worker. This match is going to be the drizzling shits, you know. And Masada went in there and just changed everything that I knew about, you know, what I thought I knew about Masada. And it taught me not to go in judging a guy by, you know, what they might do in deathmatch. Because just because they do deathmatch doesn't mean that they're a shitty worker.
Exactly. And Masada is definitely a staple to prove that point. I mean, the guy graduated with Brian Danielson in Shawn Michaels' camp. I mean, you got to learn a thing or two from that.
Yeah.
Masada is definitely one of the most underrated workers out there when it comes to just straight up hole-for-hole wrestling. But his legacy as a deathmatch worker speaks for itself. But he's definitely one of those examples that proves that the deathmatch guys might have a little something more to them than just blood and guts.
Right, right, yeah. Because that was, in fact, actually one of the questions that I broached him on when we had him on, because I'd watched some of the deathmatch stuff and then watched some of his other work, and it was like, wow, this guy's got some great basic psychology to it, and that,
That's the key. It's basically what a little bit of psychology in a deathmatch would do.
Mm-hmm.
It turns it from being random backyard smashing fucking shit over each other's heads to being actual wrestling. And Masada is definitely one of those guys that could bring the best out of almost anybody, whether you put a pure athlete in front of him, whether you put an amateur wrestler in front of him, whether you put a deathmatch guy in front of him. Masada will be the type of guy to take the absolute best from that person and bring it out and showcase it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Masada is one of the most underrated talents on the planet.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I got to see DJ Hyde was there, and I got to see Black G's too, and I didn't really know a lot about Black G's, but that guy, wow. I mean, you know, some of the stuff that he did in Extreme Rising with Blackout was just absolutely incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. So
Black G's is definitely a really good talent.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, I'm going to throw this one out for both of you. Who is probably the favorite person that that either of you like to work when you get on a show someplace?
Jules, you want to take the floor for the first one?
Oh, wow. I would honestly say that my favorite person that I've worked is, like, I have to say it. Yes, Mickey Nichols.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, Mickey Nichols, definitely.
I'd have definitely put Masada. Masada was the one that really showcased who I was, and he understood what I could bring to the table, and he was able to accentuate all the positives that I do bring, and our styles kind of hit all the negatives. It's like the old school Paul Heyman booking, accentuate the positives, hide the negatives. And Masada was very key in doing that for me, and it was really his mindset that was able to make that happen, because going into that, I really wanted to tell a story. I wanted to prove a point that death matches do belong in this business. It provides a certain amount of legitimacy to a business that, quite frankly, a lot of people say internet killed kayfabe. I beg to differ. I think the fans killed kayfabe themselves, and kayfabe is very much still alive. Because when you look at some of the shit that myself or Jules Malone do, when we're wrapping ourselves in barbed wire and shit, there's just no way that you could sit there and go, that's fake. When you see the barbs actually slice open a cut in a person's body, how could you turn around and call that fake? And anybody who says pro wrestling was fake and sees that will then turn around and look at everything else within pro wrestling and go, well, that shit was real. And I'm willing to bet that a lot of these other things that they're doing is real, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it provides a new element. And we're kind of in that era where that new element is very much a staple. Without having anybody to vouch for the realism of pro wrestling, what do you have left?
Yeah, all I have to say about that is when Mick Foley's tooth went through his nose, that shit was real.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That shit is real. Rolling on a bag of cash.
It makes everybody believe again.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you look back at the rest of the card of the King of the Ring and go, okay, well, if all this is bullshit, well then, what about all this, 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 and this?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right. Right, exactly. Mm. There you go. There you go. Yeah. So, now, one of the subjects that we haven't broached yet here is the fact that, you guys, obviously, of course, being a couple and that working in the business, how difficult can it be sometimes working on the relationship when the two of you might be in different areas at the same time? One of you may be in one part of the country and the other one being in another part than that.
Well, to answer that question, I like to go back to the movie Casino. One of the opening lines of that movie is Robert De Niro when he says, if you can't trust somebody, what's the point? I have a lot of trust and love for Jules Malone. I know that wherever she goes, she's going to be loyal to me. And I like to think that wherever I go, she knows that I'm going to be loyal to her. At the end of the day, when it comes to pro wrestling, if you can't trust somebody, why the fuck are you in the business?
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So I'd be...
Right.
Are people going to be looking? Of course they are. That's part of our jobs, you know. We're supposed to make people pay attention to us. It's whether or not the individual wants to act on a certain reaction or not. And both of us know what's right from wrong, and that makes our love stronger.
Exactly.
Aww.
Yeah, I know. I hate to get all mushy gushy on
it.
It
is cute.
Podcast, but
hey, it had to happen.
But you know what?
That's good though, because it shows that human side, because a lot of people don't understand that, because the fans, they see what they see in the ring. No, but they don't sit there and realize that, hey, these are human beings with lives outside of the business and that. My wife is not in the business, and that. But of course, obviously, when I go someplace, she goes with me, Definitely, though, life on the road like this is definitely totally different animal than what most people experience in their day-to-day lives.
Mm-hmm. And me and Jules get lucky, too, because, a lot of promoters like to bring the both of us in, so we get to travel together, and it makes traveling so much easier, because, you get to be traveling someone that you actually honestly enjoy their company with. And it could make a 10-hour long-ass road trip seem like vacation.
Yeah.
Even though we're going down south to go get cut up, but it's a vacation.
I gotta say, do you guys drive each other crazy when you're on the road?
No way.
It depends who we're traveling with.
True enough.
Happy.
A mutual friend of ours, Josh Vanderkrysen, better known as Referee Vander Cruz in Death Proof. He likes to fart a lot on the road.
Oh, Jesus. I bet he's asleep.
Imagine for 10 hours driving up from the States to Canada smelling some other dude's asshole fucking entire time. But you know what, though? At the end of the day, he's a really good friend of ours, and it's a funny story. we have a past.
We love you, Jack.
Just get them back. Close the windows.
Oh, don't worry. We do. I'm definitely no saint here. Like, I fart all the time.
Oh, yeah, man.
Oh, my God, I know.
You're Canadian. Yeah. Us Canadians were famous for farting. We invented it. No.
Farts invented by Canadians. Yeah, put that on the heritage fucking moment.
Snork. Yeah. And then maybe we should get to the important Canadian question, which is your favorite Tim Hortons donut?
My favorite Tim Hortons donut?
Oh my
yeah.
God. Come on. Four donuts are like, come on.
You know what? How do we play a game? Jules, you try to guess what my favorite donut is, and I'll try to guess what your favorite donut is, and we'll see how good of a couple we are. It's kind of like Newlyweds and shit.
Okay.
All right, so I'm going to guess that Jules Malone's favorite donut is Boston Cream.
That works. Yeah. I love it. You buy it
for me
every time.
I know.
I'm sorry. Oh, man. Hey, I'm it's fall because we got pumpkin spice donuts now, okay?
Oh, I love pumpkin spice.
Pumpkin spice chip bits. They're good.
I know. I love it.
I mean, really, at the end of the day, a donut's a fucking donut. It's going to be delicious.
I love that.
This is true. It's a fucking donut.
Okay.
Contrary to popular belief, for us, there's do eat fucking donuts.
Yeah.
And we're not tough.
Yeah. This is true. But, yeah.
All right, we've got a caller. Let's bring him on.
Oh.
Caller 401, you're on the air.
Everyone, songwriter.
Is that Rose?
You know, it's John. Hello?
Yep,
hello?
Go ahead, John. You're live.
Yeah, I didn't know if I was on. Sorry.
Yep, John.
We're waiting.
Yeah. Hi, Jules. How you doing?
Hi. How's it going, John?
What was your favorite match, you think, when you first started watching Undertaker, when you saw that was the best match I saw with him?
With The Undertaker?
Yeah, like you said, he was your favorite, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, what would you say was your favorite match with him that you said, I will remember this before I get into wrestling?
I would say Undertaker versus Nails.
What?
That was
See?
My favorite.
That's an answer for pro wrestling historian.
What was that?
I said that's the answer of a pro wrestling historian. Undertaker and Nilsie was awesome.
That's why I gotta get Bernadette on here. She's like an encyclopedia.
Yeah, one question for Jesse. What would you think was your favorite wrestler when you grew up that you wanted to be like before you got in the ring?
What do you probably It's probably someone that you wouldn't think, but honestly, my favorite as a kid was Jushin-Thunder Liger. It wasn't until I grew up when I realized how good he actually was. As a kid, I was just drawn to his cool-ass mask. But as I grew up and started studying wrestling, I realized how good he was. And I realized that there wasn't a lot of people in North America doing the kind of things that Jushin Liger does. So that's kind of been my inspiration and drive.
Awesome. Well, I did have a birthday gift for Jules Malone, but I know once she said she didn't want one before about a song, right?
Oh, my goodness. What is that?
Just 18 days away, and then it'll be Jules Malone's birthday, and she will have a hell of a day, and Jason will take her out to play, and she will go out to Tampa Bay to play in the hay, because it's her day. Hey. Happy birthday.
I want to go to Tampa Bay. Hello.
I want to go to Tampa Bay. I love the Bucs.
Well, of course, she's got to do everything the same because she can't wait for Halloween because she's going to be a queen and the best hardcore queen you ever seen when she cooks Jesse some meat cuisine.
Oh, she is a fantastic cook. I could fucking vouch for that one.
Yeah. Well, great talking to you guys both and have a great week and wish you guys best of luck.
Awesome.
Yeah, cool. Thanks, brother. Thanks, you too, dude.
Coming.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, you're breaking up.
Danny Erland. Okay, well, then I'm just going to shut up.
I heard that part pretty good.
All right. What are you, some of your guys' favorite road stories and ribs?
Ooh.
Road stories and ribs, eh?
Oh.
Let me try to think of a good one here.
Yeah, let's see.
Hey, we tell everybody it's adult rated, so, now.
Hmm. Oh,
the only people we have to worry about is Apple.
One of my favorites is making the Death Proof referee stay in the same room as PD Flex while PD Flex is bagging some random broad. It's always funny to hear the displeasure in the morning of somebody that didn't get a lot of sleep because, well, he wasn't getting any, but the guy in the room with him was.
Damn.
That was a pretty funny one.
Oh, God. That's a good road story. I don't have anything.
Right. Here's Jake, remember?
Now, all right, Jesse and Jules, if you could work anybody, living or dead, who would you want to wrestle and why?
Ooh.
I want to wrestle. Who would I want? I would say I would take on Trish Stratus.
Ooh, good choice.
Okay.
Ah, a battle of Canada.
Mm-hmm. I think I would do that. Or Bull Nakano.
Oh, I love me some Bull Nakano.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh. Yeah, because, you know, I was playing video games and I wrestled her as that before.
If I was to pick anybody, I'd have to say Vader. Vader is one of those guys that always had that reputation of being very snug, almost too snug. But one of the real key things that I look when I see Vader is Vader almost made Cactus Jack. Mick Foley was a guy that could endure that kind of punishment. I'm not saying I'm anywhere near as good as Mick Foley because I'm not, but to be able to go toe-to-toe with Vader would be kind of like the next step in the footsteps of those before me, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Be able to prove that, okay, I'll take on the biggest and the strongest.
I got my ass.
But you can't keep me down.
Right.
And personally, I always thought that Vader in a hardcore-ish deathmatch environment would have been fucking awesome. Like, imagine if fucking Vader was in ECW. What would Paul E. have done with that character?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
He would have been sick and psychotic. He would have been psychotic, man.
Yeah. It would have been fucking awesome, is what it would have been.
People run from the
ring. Like, Vader versus Sabu. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Vader would
have a little bit of fantasy booker here, but fuck.
Yeah.
Vader and ECW would have been the bomb. But
yeah.
Second runner-up, definitely.
Or Vader Mike Awesome. Or Vader Mike Awesome. Two big guys. They'd have tore a place up. Yeah. Wow.
Well, and you can't tell me that he didn't work with Masato Tanaka over in Japan.
Yeah, I think he did. I think he did.
You guys still with us?
Jules, Jesse?
Yeah, we're still here.
Okay.
Go ahead
and
speak.
Okay, quiet stuff.
So, yeah. So, okay, well, then that, now that definitely brings up some extra points there, because talking about,
Now, what is the worst injury you guys have had in the ring?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I was going to ask that. That's from our chat.
Oh, okay. Worst injury? I've had two concussions.
Ooh.
Let's see. I have had, and then just I've had, like, just a couple gashes here and there, and I have a couple scars to prove it. And other than that, then just some bruises, scrapes, you know, nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
Worst injury. Ooh. Well, I've had a few concussions, but contrary to popular belief, most of my concussions came from playing, like, football and hockey and shit, which kind of, like, weakened my brain, I guess, to be more susceptible to them when it comes to pro wrestling. But I have to say the worst injury that I had was when I was gorilla press thrown over the top rope, and I landed directly on my hip. What ended up happening is that impact fractured my hip, and I slipped the disc in my back. And this happened in the first maybe 45 seconds of a 25-minute five-man tables match. But I was, and I ended up going through the whole thing and winning, but fuck did that do its toll. It took a long time to recover from that. Unfortunately, a car accident also occurred after that, about a year into the rehab. I got in a car accident and reversed everything again. So it's been a long, hard battle back. But I would have to say that was probably the absolute worst injury I've had.
Wow. Holy
but, I mean,
cow.
Fuck. If Ric Flair could fucking come back and have a huge, have a storied career after a plane crash, I'm pretty sure a car accident isn't going to keep me down.
That's why he's going down.
Oh, well. There you go. Gosh. So, all right.
Now, what was your guys' favorite promotion growing up? Was it, you know, ECW, WCW, AWA, GWF? You know, what was your the one that you really liked?
My favorite growing up was WWF or WWE, and then. And then as time went by, it was ECW. And then now I just sort of like, I prefer the indies myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm kind of in that same boat. I mean, Canada kind of gets screwed when it comes to wrestling in a sense. There really isn't a lot on our networks and stuff growing up other than WWF when I was a kid. I remember seeing some WCW stuff, like WCW Saturday Night and shit, Boudreaux on TBS and all that. But, like, Nitro, like, TNT wasn't really a channel up in Canada. Like, we had to wait till, like a secondary station would pick up the rights from TNT to air it in Canada. And usually Nitro actually aired on Tuesdays and shit up here.
Okay.
But back in the days of tape trading and all that shit, my grandfather actually was avid into that stuff. So I was lucky to be able to see ECW as it was on the rise when I was a young age. And I was drawn to it because it was so different and unique. And with illegal cheater boxes and de-scrambling and getting pay-per-views for free and shit, I was able to see a lot of the ECW pay-per-views when they were coming out. And I look forward to them. So I remember distinctively looking forward to the ECW brand. But the most realistic answer would have to be WWF by default, just because that was pretty much all that was able to be showcased up here. Maple Leaf Wrestling was bought out by Titan Sports in the, I think, late 80s. And that pretty much dictated what was going on Canadian Airwaves up here.
Okay.
But as we turn the page now, I'm definitely in Jules' boat here and say that today, I don't even watch mainstream wrestling. I like the talent. I just don't like knowing that from on the indie scene, I know what all these guys are capable of. And what I see presented almost is a watered-down version of that, and that's what kind of bugs me a bit. I understand it, but at the same time, I prefer the indie just because that's where you're going to see the people go above and beyond on a consistent basis.
Okay.
I mean, it's almost like if you look at it like hockey. I mean, you can go to an NHL game, it's awesome because it's the NHL. But really, if you want to go see a really good, true, gritty hockey game, you'll go to a junior game. You'll see an OHL game because those kids are playing for something. The people who made it have already accomplished the goal. In a sense. That's the way I kind of look at it. So that's why I always prefer indies over the mainstream, because everybody's fighting for the same thing.
Good answer. That's a good answer. I like that. I like that.
And this is why I love him.
That's excellent. All right. Anybody else got anything that they can think of that they want to go ahead and ask her?
Well, Tank Girl might, when she gets back, she'll be back in a second, hopefully.
Oh, did we embarrass her again and she ran off and hid?
No, she's having problems with her and Skype, so I don't know what's going on. Hopefully she'll be back here in a moment or two.
All right. Katie? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, gotta love Canadian Wi-Fi, eh? Jesus. Fucking Rogers.
I hear that problem.
Fucking Rogers.
That's what happens when you have only like two companies to give you internet up here. Bullshit.
Yeah. No, it kind of really fucking sucks.
Yeah.
It's like that funny video on the internet about like the oligopolies and shit in the cable industry when it comes to cable providers and internet and how, well, we get screwed because, well, if their internet's faster in Korea, well, then way cheaper. What the fuck are we doing up here?
And then we sit here and complain down in the States about how much cheaper and faster it is everywhere else.
So put it that way. You guys complain about how much cheaper and faster it is everywhere else, except for fucking Canada, because here it's more expensive and slower.
Of course, I didn't get to try online when I was up there about 5 years ago. So, I can't sit there and say anything about the internet up there. And that, yeah, I do know that the minute you cross the border, though, Rogers does take over your cell phone. So.
Yeah, same thing when we go south. AT&T takes over.
Yeah. Well, there you go. There you go. So, so we both get screwed.
The funny part about it is Rogers and AT&T are in bed with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, fuck. Conspiracy? I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah,
North America.
Yeah, yeah. We'll give you free trade. You give us fuck all. Thank you.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, where do you guys primarily work at? Is there anything you guys want to share?
Jules?
Let's see. This weekend I have a CCW. That's in Ontario. That's an Ontario company. And that's in Rodney, Ontario. Also, I have Death Proof on Sunday.
Fuck yeah.
Death Proof on Sunday. And I get to face Jody D'Amato. And
two on three.
Two falls match. So I'm going to kick her ass.
Yeah, and what is it? It's pin, submit, or through a table?
Yes, that's right. And I'm going to put that bitch right through a table. One, two, three. It's all going to be to me, sweetheart.
I love her fire.
Sure you're not a redhead? Jeez.
Nope.
She sounds like me, that's why.
Oh, you're a ginger, are you?
Yeah, totally, totally. The evil, evil right Polish ginger kid. Fucking right.
All right, so can you, like, debunk the myth that gingers have no souls?
No, I cannot, because for every freckle I have is a soul I have stolen.
Right on.
Now, we do have another, we have another question from the chat. Crime Fighter, that's what his name is. He says, how does the Canadian wrestling scene differ from the American wrestling scene? That's a good one.
I think the style is that it's honestly pretty much the same thing. It's just that the US has a lot more of a fan base than Canada. You know, it's the exact same promotions, the exact same people, and I find that, like, in the past 4 years that I've been traveling between, like, Canada and U.S., is that, you know, it's just, like, it's all the same thing. There's no difference at all.
Wow. When it comes down to it, and you look at it...
It's like coming across the border and, like, saying, you know, hey, I'm going to wrestle. You know, if you have a visa, some people get caught at border. Some people get through okay. But, you know, some people get caught. And that's one of the hard things of being Canadian.
When you break it down, it's all power of the people, realistically. United States have a way bigger populace than what Canada does. So naturally, you will get more fans. The content is pretty much the same. You're going to get the great wrestling. You're going to get the great high flying. But there's an old saying that I've seen kicking around, and I've actually really liked it. It was, in Canada, it's tradition. In Mexico, it's a religion. In Japan, it's a sport. And in America, it's a joke.
I've seen that before.
And it's true and it's not true. It's true when you look at the mainstream aspects of things. The indie scene is very similar, it's very parallel with one another. It's just the numbers game. You're going to draw more in the States than you do in Canada because there's just more people to draw in the States. Plain and simple. But Canada does have that reputation for putting out really good wrestlers. I mean, the list goes on from anyone from Chris Jericho to fucking Lance Storm,
Benoit,
Leo Burke, Bret Hart, Owen Hart, the entire Hart family. The list goes on and on. Ed,
Benoit, the Americans that have gone up there and trained, like Brian Pillman.
Exactly. Steve Austin.
He's not. Pillman's ours. He's not yours anymore. Once you come here, you're ours. We claim you. Yeah, we don't give you back. No. Pillman's ours.
Right on. Yeah, I'll take that. Pillman is ours.
Yeah.
But definitely, when it comes down to it, it's pretty much a numbers game. So when there's more people to draw from, you're going to do better off in the States. That's why you see a lot of Canadians traveling south. And not as much of Americans coming north, but we're kind of lucky where we are. Ontario is pretty much a hotbed for indie wrestling. A lot of great talent has come out of here. I mean, look at the rosters of WWE and TNA and Ring of Honor. There's a really big chunk of that pie comes from a small section in Ontario.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we're kind of blessed by that, but it also makes it harder because people see that and more people are drawn to try to do it. So it's almost like, that's a good analogy here. It's almost like trying to be like the top gorilla in the jungle that's like full of gorillas. You know, it's going to be a really big fight to try to be the king primate. So that kind of competitive nature will drive everybody to push that little bit harder, a little bit farther, which is where I think Canada is getting its reputation from, because we're all competing with one another to try to get noticed.
Right. But so if the ones that do get through are great. They're, you know, they're great. And like you said, Edge, Christian, Benoit, the Hart Dynasty, you know, like, we've got everything. Mm-hmm. Stu Hart's dungeon is here, motherfuckers. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's here. So, yeah. And you're right. The States have a lot more promotions, you know. Like, when I was growing up, it was what Stu had to offer, and that was about it. When I was growing up.
Now, have you guys ever had any trouble traveling from the U.S. to Canada back and forth? Because Michael Elgin is right now being held in Canada despite being married to Mischief, who is an American citizen.
Damn it.
It all depends on how you approach the situation. I mean, with the Elgin thing, there's a lot of stuff that I don't know about, like the technicalities of things when it comes to work visas and all that stuff. In a company like ROH, they tend to do things that way. When it comes to the border, I find the easiest way to do is just pretend you're a tourist. Nobody has questions.
Exactly.
You know, that's really the best way that you could go about it. There's really no other way to do it because the laws dictate that Canadians can't come down south without a work visa to work, whether it's in entertainment, but an American could come up north to Canada to work as long as they make under $10,000.
Right.
So really, when it comes down to the laws and everything else, it's almost like it works against Canadians, it works for the Americans, and I don't mean that in any sort of like negative way, it's just the way it is. So really, all you have to do is be smart about it. And you generally won't have an issue. Jules?
Okay. We're just taking a little vacation, or we're visiting some family, and you guys are in. Okay. Okay.
Got anything to declare? Nope.
Pretty much.
Nope. No, because I'll tell you straight up, when I was living in British Columbia and in Abbotsford, and we go over to Seattle to shop, my uncle would go and buy like a case of Jack Daniels, and I'm telling you, they'd catch him every time, and they'd be like, "Red, you know the deal, right in the sewer." Oh, yeah. So every single time. Every time. So, yeah, don't mess around at the border. Oh, yeah. My mom used to make us put our brand new shoes on, run around the parking lot, scuff up our jackets, our jeans, or anything else she made us buy. And
Boy, that sounds like the old days of bringing Coors beer across state lines.
Pretty much.
My gosh.
Steve, you want to have our guests do the final thing that we need them to do before we let them go? Because it's probably Canadian time. Well, it's getting to be Canadian time.
Yeah, sounds Sounds good. So what we'll have you guys do is you'll say who you are and that, and that you're listening to, and the letters are P as in Peter, W as in William, R as in Robert, Slam, PWR Slam, on the Back to Basics Network.
Cool.
And you guys can decide how you guys want to start it. So whenever you're ready, you guys go ahead.
You first.
All right. So just go whenever I want?
Yep,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
All right, and what's the network called again? I've already forgot that.
All right. Okay, it's P as in Peter, W as in William, R as in Robert, PWR Slam,
yeah.
On the Back to Basics Network.
Back to Basics Network?
Yeah.
Right.
All right, cool. All right, you ready?
Yep, go ahead.
Yep.
Cool. Hey, this is Jesse Falconamato here, and you're listening to PWR Slam on the Back to Basics Network.
Excellent.
All right, Jules.
All right. Yeah, okay. All right, so I am Jules Malone, the Hardcore Princess, and you're listening to PWR Slam at the Back to Basics. Oh, fuck. I fucked it up.
Almost got it.
That's one.
All right. Take two.
Take two again. Great. What do I have to say again? Okay. I'm Jules Malone on the PWR Back to Basics Network.
PWR Slam on the Back to Basics Network.
Oh, my God.
Take three.
Thanks, Ray. Oh, darling.
Hey, you're in good company. Kenny Bowen took like 4 or 5 times to get this, so you're all right, Jules.
Hold on. Her phone just died. Here, I'm going to hand her over my phone so she can do this.
Oh, damn.
All right, hold on 1 second. We're going to save this.
Hi. Hello?
Yep.
Go ahead. Go ahead. You're in.
Okay. What am I supposed to say?
All right. Yeah, you're Jules Malone, the Hardcore Princess, and you're listening to PWR Slam on the Back to Basics Network.
I'm Jules Malone. You know what? I can't do this.
Yeah. And you're listening to PWR Slam on the Back to Basics Network.
I should be there with cue cards.
Yeah. Sean, we really need to start emailing this stuff to these people or messaging it to them. I feel bad.
It's all good, honey. It's all good.
All right.
They messed us both up tonight.
They drop.
Okay. So, whenever you're ready.
They dropped.
They're gone. They went bye-bye.
Uh-oh.
Well, we
lost them.
Well, we're going to go ahead and break, ladies and gentlemen. And when we come back here in just a couple minutes, we will be joined by Jason Maples of Heroes and Legends Wrestling out of Fort
Ooh.
Wayne, Indiana.
Ooh.
Excellent. Excellent.
I have no info on him. Great.
I will get you some during the break. You are listening to PWR Slam. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. Our promoter spotlight is next.
Down now, I don't give a fuck time. It's go time. here from OneWrestling.com with several of my friends. Sir, what you gonna do, brother, when PWR Slam on the Graveyard Network runs wild under... Wait a second, you can't say that. Sorry, this is Bill After, but wait a second, it's the Dream. You talking about PWR Slam on the Graveyard... Funker, come here. I don't want to talk if we're on PWR Slam. After, come here. I was just trying to say this is Bill After from OneWrestling.com, and I'm proud to be here at PWR Slam on the Graveyard.
All right, to get him back on so he can do that. All right.
Press something here.
Okay. What's up?
Tank Girl, you saw the photo. Steve, I don't know if you got a chance to see it, but Bill, Ben Jordan, Vito Tomasilli, Paulie Tomasilli, I don't know who the fuck you think you are.
Oh, my God.
I don't care that you worked for fucking JCW and Vito got to book for JCW and all of this bullshit. That gives you no fucking right at all to fucking mock a guy that just died not even 24 hours ago. Was found dead not even 24 hours ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Asking
people to take the Mike Awesome Challenge.
Yeah, and if anybody knows who Mike Awesome is,
it's not even a sick joke. It's fucking wrong.
Yeah, well, I mean, Vito worked for me a long time ago. You know, back then he was a, you know, good, humble little kid. Well, I think he took a few too many shots to the head because he's definitely, you know, he's turned into a real, you know, jagoff. That's the only way I can put it. Ben Jordan has never been anything except a jagoff, and unfortunately, you know, Vito's little brother is starting to follow in his footsteps now, and then he's going to wonder why he can't get any major work outside of the fact that he's a friggin' midget that's about 5'4". So,
well, and Brandon,
you know,
used to
and
be
he'll
good.
Spend his
RCW
life working in front of crowds of 50.
Really good, but I don't know where those two took a wrong turn, but they took a wrong turn somewhere, and to mock somebody like that, you have no respect for yourself. And you have no respect for this business or what those men did in this business.
Yeah, exactly. Sean O'Hare went places that you only wish you could have gotten to. Remember, Vito, we know that you had to pay your way to get to TNA. You had to pay to get a match there. We know all about you. You're nothing more than a fake. So, all right, and the end of rant there. Is Jason with us yet, Sean?
Not yet. He will be with us
soon. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what then. I definitely want to lighten up the mood. I don't know if I don't think you saw it. Katie, did you happen to watch Bellator on Friday night?
I'm sorry. No, I didn't.
Did you watch the Bellator MMA card on Friday night?
I don't believe I can get that.
Okay. Well, you get Spike, right?
No, I don't. There's Rogers,
oh.
as we said.
Oh, thanks to Rogers Cable, yes.
Rogers.
But you do get the WWE Network for $9.99, which we all have to get online down here.
No, I got a link I watch. It's all good.
Well, anyway, this past Friday night, Bellator MMA had a card that was held on Spike. I'm sure a lot of you saw that. And for those of you who didn't, professional wrestling was very well represented in this. Bobby Lashley, the current TNA champion, made his Bellator debut and just absolutely demolished
his opponent, forcing him to tap out to a rear naked choke in the third round after basically beating him to a the guy's head and face were just totally bloodied up. I mean, you know, if this was WWE and Vince McMahon, they would have gone to black and white on it, because that's how bad it was. I mean, you know, but Bobby definitely stepped it up. He made TNA proud. He made the wrestling business proud, because he definitely looked good in there. King Mo, who also has been involved with TNA, is making a bit of a comeback after having left Bellator for a while due to some differences with past management, and so he made his return. But probably the bit of the night, and Sean, I don't know if you've been able to find this and chew it up. If not, I will definitely go ahead and kind of talk through it, and anybody that's in the chat room that saw this, please feel free to chime in. Katie will definitely relay anything to me. But the current light heavyweight champion, one of the legends of this business, Stefan Bonner, who has made a comeback of sorts himself due to some issues that happened when he was with UFC, is scheduled on, I think it's November 17th, to fight another legend who also has spent some time on, it's November 14th, okay, that has spent some time on TNA himself, and that is Tito Ortiz. And the two of them engaged in what we call in wrestling the classic pull apart.
Okay.
Bonner came across as the heel, talking about how Tito has used managers and sparring partners in the past to get himself ahead and turn around and treat them like crap, and in fact they actually had one of Tito's former sparring partners there, actually had him under a mask at first. And Sean, I hope you're trying to find that audio, because I definitely would love for people to hear this, because Bonner went off, on a total rant, and talked about how, anybody that's a fan of Tito Ortiz, the only reason that they're a fan is because they don't know him. And then Bonner dropped the pipe bomb. Mm-hmm. He said to Tito, "I don't know how Jenna put up with you for all those years." And of course, a lot of people might be aware, Tito Ortiz, in fact, at one time was involved with and living with porn star Jenna Jameson. In fact, they have children together.
Oh wow!
But the situation, apparently, of course, there have been allegations, and in light of the situation now with Ray Rice, that has been all over the press over the last 48 hours, the allegations of abuse by Tito on Jenna did kind of dominate for a while, and in fact they're no longer together. So Tito went along doing basically the babyface role, saying, you can talk about me all you want, but you bring my family into this, and there's a problem. And then he jumped Bonner, and officials and the people that Bonner had with him pulled the two of them apart. And that, I mean, definitely. I mean, this. I mean, you talk about doing a great promo and getting people interested to, you know, go ahead and get the product. Well, hats off to Bonner and Ortiz for doing this, because I mean they definitely hyped it to the nth degree. It was definitely well done, no question about it. And that. And then other props go out to Triple H on last Friday's SmackDown. Now, Kay, you did see that, right?
No, I was out on Friday.
Oh, you were out on Friday.
Well, you missed basics at 10 o'clock, so.
Oh, okay. Well, you missed Triple H channeling.
You love your job. There's just some things that is just like a burden to have to do. You know, it's like busy work. You just don't want to have to come out and do it, but you just have to, right? So here I am to do my busy work, because I wouldn't want John Cena in there, the great almighty Cena, to think that the authority can't make a decision. So here goes my busy work. Let me tell you something, player. This is how it's going to be on Friday Night SmackDown.
How's that voice?
It'll be the team of Kane, Seth Rollins, Bray Wyatt, and the Wyatt family against... Well, hell, you guys all get it. You know the drill. It's a 10-man tag starring everybody here, including Roman Reigns and John Cena. Now, how about that? Playa, holla.
Are you kidding me? You know, Roman Reigns couldn't have done any better. We got up a 10-man tag, by God. That's got to be one of the biggest SmackDown history. What a match made by the
CLO
Triple H.
Oh, my God. Now, that was hilarious. I mean, Triple H channeling Teddy Long, and in fact, they even used Teddy's music on there. That was absolutely classic. I mean, you know, it was definitely a comeback from the previous two Raws, which had been total crap.
All right,
well,
we're
going to
go live to Jason Maples now.
Oh, there we go. Hey, Jason, how you doing, brother?
You know, if I was doing any better, I couldn't possibly stand it.
Well, definitely sounds like from all the word we're hearing about this upcoming Heroes and Legends card. So, as my buddy Chet Kopic says, your dime, your dance floor. Tell us about what's going on in this one.
Well, you know, I probably can't tell you anything that's not already out there, but of course we've got Heroes and Legends 4 happening this Saturday in Fort Wayne, Indiana. We're at the Fort Wayne Fun Dome. Doors open at 2 o'clock, and from 2 o'clock until 6, the fans can come in and mingle and rub shoulders with, you know, all the stars on the show, and then the show goes live at 7:30. Got some fantastic matches happening, and even during the pre-show or the fan fest, you know, we've got some, what I think we've done is we opened up the door to other companies. As far as I know, I think we're the first to do this, and I'm allowing other companies to showcase their company on our show. And so, for example, we got Strong Style Wrestling coming in. We've got IROG from Michigan and NGW from out in Portland, Oregon. And they're going to be actually showcasing the best of their companies with matches on our pre-show.
Now, you're also working with David Hero in Great Lakes Championship Wrestling.
Oh, absolutely. Dave Hero's awesome. I've been up to his Blizzard Brawl shows, and I admire what Dave Hero does, and we talk often, and I enjoy having Dave down. He's bringing down Rosita and Al Snow, and of course Mean Gene Okerlund. coming down with Dave. It's going to be pretty amazing.
Yeah.
There's even an opportunity. There's even a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, I think. I mean, maybe not once-in-a-lifetime, but certainly you'll want to do this in your lifetime. You can actually do a video promo with Mean Gene, and Gene will talk to you like, you know, as if you're getting ready to go out for your match at WrestleMania or what have you. And, you know, you could even do the, let me tell you something, Mean Gene kind of deal. But you know, you take the video home with you. And, you know, keep it forever. I've got a bunch of guys that are coming down. They're doing their bachelor party, and they plan on having Mean Gene cut them some promo stuff for their bachelor party. I think it's going to be pretty funny.
Oh, wow.
Holy balls!
That is going to be so cool.
Oh, my gosh. That's hilarious. I love it. I love it. That's great. That's great. So, yeah.
Mean Gene to tell you all those stories that Bobby the Brain Heenan wouldn't tell you.
Oh,
brother, you know, Bobby Heenan, God bless him, you know, he was at our last show, and that man was just as funny now as I've ever remembered him being. And, you know, you got to kind of really pay attention to when he's talking now, to really understand what he's saying, unfortunately, due to the surgeries and whatnot that he's had. But if you're really paying attention and you're looking at him while he's talking to you, it's pretty crystal clear still. And that man is so damn funny. Bobby Heenan is amazing.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Boy, that's something. Now, okay, now, of course, obviously, I mean, you know, we talk about how being in the promotion that trying not to be that guy in that. But is there anybody of the people that you've got coming in that you're sitting there and thinking, all right, I'm that guy. I'm marking out over the fact that I got this guy coming in.
You say that I'm marking out that I've got that guy coming in?
You're suddenly now that guy, and it's like, oh my gosh, he's really coming.
For me, I've been blessed. You know, this is I'm in a little over 20 years now in the business, and you know, when I started, I was doing stand-up comedy, and some wrestlers showed up at a show that I was doing and introduced me to Ivan Koloff. And. And, you know, he kind of hooked me up, and I went through his training facility down in North Carolina. I mean, I lucked into a business that I truly love, and again, over 20 years. And, I mean, most of these guys I've worked with many times. And so, I mean, there's really not too many guys that I haven't met or worked with. And so
I don't mean to interrupt you, but we had Rosie on earlier, and I had noticed that you had posted a photo of you and Yokozuna. What was it like hand in hand with Yoko?
Well, here's the thing, and Rosie and I have actually tag teamed a few times on some shows, but here was the great thing. You know, I trained with Ivan, and I was working some shows down in the Carolinas, and I ended up working with Matt Hardy on an event. And we kind of hit it off, and this was when he was still in the indies, you know. And then Matt calls me, and he says, you know, we're going up to do some WWF tapings. Do you want to go? And I was like, of course. You know, so, you know, we went, and here I was, man, not even a year under my belt in training, going to work for the WWF at the time, which is now unheard of. I mean, again, it was something, I was in the right place at the right time. But to get back to your question, Yokozuna was an amazing guy. He was the first guy that pulled a rib on me in the locker room. We kind of hit it off, you know, and he was a friend, and Rodney would do anything for anybody. He was very kind-hearted, he was a great guy, man. I feel blessed to have known him.
Wow. There you go. There you go. Excellent, excellent. So now, so who all do you have that's going to be coming down and being part of it this time? I mean, you know, you talked about Al, who's a longtime friend of mine, and you talked about me and Gene and that. Who all else is going to be showing up for the weekend there?
You know, brother, I am excited from top to bottom, and I mean, you know, since March of 2013, you know, we've had some great names come through up here, and I feel like we've just when I think, rather, that, you know, I don't know that we can get any better than what we did the last time. I think this show really, on paper and in my mind, this show is going to really kick butt. You know, even the undercard, which I can't even classify as an undercard, we've got Sugar Dunkerton with Tracy Smothers.
Ooh,
brother, that is going to blow the roof off. And that's like on the first half of the show. You know,
oh my gosh.
You've got
a guy, Big Russ Jones, and this guy, I've seen some of his YouTube stuff, just impressive. He's going to be taking on Tommy Dreamer. That's going to be a barn burner.
You know, I was getting to that as well. Russ Jones is a monster of a man, you know, and, you know, he's not a rookie, but, you know, he hasn't been around a whole long time, but the time that he has been in the business, he has really made a name for himself, at least in our area, and I'm hearing he's getting some really good bookings coming up, and I don't want to spill the beans. I'll let Russ do that, but I've seen kind of some stuff that he's got going on, and he's going to be a guy to look out for. And, you know, Tommy Dreamer and him are possibly going to steal the show as well. I mean, when I'm just looking at the show on paper, almost every single match in my mind is like a fantastic match. You know, and it's not just a biased opinion. I mean, I'm looking at it as a promoter and also as a fan, because I am still a fan of the business as well. And I think, you know, every match we have on the show, you know, and my God, our tickets start at $15. I mean, you can't see this kind of stuff for $15. You know what I mean?
No.
It's crazy.
Wow. So, all right. Now who are some of the other legends that are going to be, you know, appearing, even, you know, if it's, you know, just to do pictures and autographs and that?
Well, of course, we've got Hillbilly Jim coming in, which is going to be amazing. He's going to be hanging out with Mean Gene, I'm sure, you know, talking about the Legends House stuff that they did. We've also got Sabu is coming in as a vendor. You know, we've got the BWO, all three members of the BWO. They're taking on our tag champs and taking on Troy Miller. So Jake Oman, Scotty Young, and Troy Miller against Meanie, Nova, and Stevie Richards, I think, is going to be fantastic. We've got Gangrel will be taking on Congo Kong.
Yeah, he was on last week and was talking about that. He's definitely excited.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be fantastic. And then, you know, we've got Carlito challenging Drew Skills for the heavyweight title.
I haven't heard in a while.
So, I mean, the whole show, top to bottom, bro, I think is going to be amazing. Of course, you already mentioned, you know, Tommy Dreamer and Russ Jones. And we've got some of our graduates from Body Slam University that are going to be taking part of a match against Eli McFly and Roderick Street. You know, again, we've got the pre-show matches, some guys that have not worked for me before. I'm a little anxious to see what they can do in the ring. A guy named Jester Yorick, he's in the Indiana area quite a bit, but I've never had the opportunity to have him come in, so looking forward to seeing that guy work. And
is a great talent. I've seen his work. He was a part of the Three Rings, and we've had them on in the past, and I'm good friends with Machine, and Machine and him and Grin and Max Holiday.
Wait, now, are you talking about a guy named Machine from, like, up north that had a mask on with, like, dreadlocks or braids on it?
Yes, that's our Machine, yep.
That's awesome. He used to come down and work for me when I ran the EWS.
He talked about that, right? Yeah, Mike's a great guy. No question about it. We've been friends and coworkers for a long time.
Underrated talent on the independents, because that guy can go with some of the best of them, and I've seen it over and over and over. I have just seen it. He got to work Dreamer at NAPW over in Rochelle, and I saw that match on YouTube, and that was just a fantastic match. And I mean, the whole three ring thing was just absolutely really, really cool. I don't know if you got to know Botch that ran Fire, but they were tag partners, and it was great to see them machine bring back the three rings, because Botch was gone, and it was like, okay, they're bringing it back, but they're bringing it back, and they've got new elements, and they added Jester, Yorick, and Max Holiday, and Grin, which was an original member, and I think they even tried to incorporate Yabo in it at some point, and I don't know where that went. I think that would be another great addition to it, because Yabo's just, I've heard from promoters, I've got a couple friends that are promoters, and they're like, well, I don't want to book Yabo because I don't want to scare the kids. I said, if he's coming out there and scaring the kids, he's doing his job.
Amen.
Right.
Exactly. It's like a heel. If they hate you, you're doing your job.
Right. Absolutely. Right.
Man, I'm trying to remember this cat that used to come down with Machine. I think he now works for Resistance Pro. Am I thinking the guy's name was Ego?
Yep.
Yeah. Ego Fantastico, yes.
Yeah, Ego yep. Fantastico. Yeah, that cat was pretty good too, man. And hell yeah. I remember but that's been many years ago that he was that. I don't think he's wrestling as that now, but because I think he's not wearing the mask anymore. But that brought me back a little blast from the past talking about Machine. That was cool.
Yeah.
If you talk to him, by the way, tell him I said hello.
I got to watch Jay Retzels and was a part of Jay Rep's original Revolution Championship Wrestling down in LaSalle, where Punk became the heavyweight champion. So I got to see some of these guys like Machine, Apollo Starr. Brandon Bishop was another one that was big down there. They pushed Cameron Cage for a long time. I mean, it was just great to see all of the talent that went through there. And now I had to expose last week a backyard group that's running in Streeter that's going by Revolution Wrestling. And I had to send them links to DVDs. And I'm like, here's your proof. Go order the DVD. I'm not lying. CM Punk was the champion of LaSalle. You guys don't need to be using that name. You got money to buy gear. You got money to buy a ring. You got money to buy a belt. Why don't you have money to get trained?
Yep.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, as long as, as long as they're able to go online and buy that stuff, man, you're going to have it. It's been happening forever, man, and people just try to take the easy way to get in. And the bad thing is, man, and I see it all the time, I'll go to a show and, the people that are buying tickets, on this show are working in the curtain jerker match at the next show. It's because the promoters are trying to get these guys to come in and not pay them anything, so they're promising them a dream to be a wrestler, and then they're not getting trained. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, man. So, all right. So, why don't you go ahead. Go ahead, Sean.
What are your thoughts on Pro Wrestling Syndicate? Because, man, I see some of the flyers that they've posted that on Halloween this year, they've got Harlem Heat reuniting for the first time in over 14 years. They got a show September 20th with Ricky Steamboat and... God, they just added somebody else that was just released, and I can't remember who it was. But I mean, Pro Wrestling Syndicate. I look at that and I'm like, man, that out here would make a killing. And I don't know.
You know, You know, I've never talked to the promoter from Pro Wrestling Syndicate in person, but I've chatted with those guys, you know, on Facebook, and I think they've got a great product, and I've seen those same posters that you're talking about, and you know, they really stand out. They seem like a very classy company, and they got their stuff together, man. I'm hoping they're doing good business out there. I can't imagine that they're not, considering who they're bringing in, you know, and Harlem Heat, that's hot, man. That's pretty cool that they got them coming in.
I saw Steamboat, and I think they got Bruno Sammartino coming in for an appearance.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which, you know,
I love
can only assume he's doing it because it's local to the East Coast.
Sure.
I don't think he would be, you know, hey, I'm going to travel to California, you know, maybe for the Cauliflower Alley Club he'd travel out that way, but that would be about the only reason he'd travel out that way, because he's old and, you know, he doesn't have to do it. I mean, he's in the WWE Hall of Fame. You know, he doesn't have to go out and do it. But...
Right.
There's guys like Harley Race that are still doing it, and it's cool to see guys like Harley, you know, still chugging along, doing the appearances. I got to meet Vader on my birthday in 2013. That was an awesome experience. Vader was
very cool.
Awesome.
Yeah,
he was just awesome.
Sean, hate to cut you, but we've only got like a couple of minutes left here, so... Yeah, we definitely want to go ahead and let Jason get his plug in here for as far as how to get tickets and things like that. So, you know, go ahead and give us that information, Jason, if you would.
Yeah, fantastic. And first, I want to say, you know, thanks for having me on the show, man. You guys are great to talk to, and I wish that we had longer because it's fun reminiscing. But certainly, Heroes and Legends 4 this Saturday, Fort Wayne, Indiana. We're at the Fort Wayne Fun Dome. You can get tickets in advance at heroesandlegendswrestling.com. Make sure you follow us on Facebook. We're at Heroes and Legends Wrestling. And on Twitter, we're Heroes and Legends. There's no D on the and. It's just Heroes, A-N, Legends on Twitter. You know, we've got a great show again. Doors open at 2 o'clock for the Fan Fest. 7:30 bell time for the show. We've also got a couple of live bands, an Elvis impersonator. We've got some people juggling fire. We've just got cool stuff happening all day. You can even play cornhole. I mean, we're having a good time all day on Saturday.
What's cornhole? That just sounds wrong.
it's the game with the little boards and the bean bags, and you throw the bag and you try to land it in the hole.
Oh, I've never heard it called cornhole. I'm Canadian, sorry.
Yeah, Canadian, eh?
Yeah. Some places call it bad.
Yeah, our
Katie.
Shows are family friendly.
Yeah.
So it'd be nothing crazy. Just some beanbag games. But we're gonna have a great time, you know. And again, I appreciate you guys letting us come on the show and talk about the event. And we look forward to having all the fans show up. And the wrestlers are all looking forward to meeting the fans. And we've got some great announcements we'll be making at the show about Heroes and Legends 5 that will be happening in the spring of 2015. We're going to announce our headliner at that event. And quite frankly, it's going to blow your socks off.
Wow.
I can't wait.
Awesome.
Jason, we'll have you back.
Well, Jason,
Heroes and Legends 5.
You know what? Got to say, maybe we could have Jason back since he did stand up for the stand up night.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. We could definitely do that.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll get back in touch with you on that then. So, all right. Well, Jason Maples, again, thanks so much. We do appreciate it, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Fantastic. You guys have a great night.
You too.
Thanks
for coming out, me.
Oh, guys and gals. Sorry.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, here we go. We're going to make a couple more announcements. I want to get to next week's, and then I'll go into the big one. Next week is show 50. You're not going to want to miss it, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be Vordell Walker, and there'll be some other guests joining us. Be sure to check out our Facebook page for those announcements. And if you haven't done so, well, I'm sorry, you're out of time to get your answer in for tonight's trivia question to win the signed copy of Bobby Blaze Smedley's book, Pin Me, Pay Me, Have Boots, Will Travel.
Right. And Katie, you're not eligible because you work for us now, so.
Right. Not eligible. It's all good.
All right, and.
Yep, October 1st, don't worry that is, don't worry animal will be appearing with us.
And a very special tribute to Road Warrior Hawk, who will have been gone 11 years, the 19th of October. I can't believe it, Steve. I got to meet both of them, and just a pleasant experience it was.
Yeah. Mike was a great guy. I miss him so much. I miss him so much.
If it wasn't for Mike, I would have never got involved with Revolution Championship Wrestling because Mike gave me tickets when I didn't have money to go to their very first show.
Yeah.
And I had a ticket for Gabe.
Mm-hmm. Wow. All right.
That's how fun.
All right.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this has been PWR Slam number 49. Be sure to join us next week for show 50. I am Sadistic Sean David, along with my co-host,
the Dean of Wrestling Referees, Steve Kane, and...
And...
Tank Girl.
Good night, everybody. Thank you for joining us.
Good night.
Nighty-night. Keep your stick on the ice.